This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan, filling in for Juliet Jacobs, who is away on holiday, but I'm sure still fighting the good fight. Existentialism is a multi-award-winning theatrical show by Irish performer Joanne Ryan, and it explores what it's like to be a woman trying to decide whether to have a child in the 21st century. The show uses the creator's own experiences and a huge dose of humor to explore issues that are both personal and political, and asks important questions about the way we think and talk about women's bodies and reproduction. Existentialism is showing in Kuala Lumpur tonight, the 7th of September, as part of the Diversity KL International Arts Festival 2018. And Joanne Ryan is here with me today. Thank you for joining me, Joanne.
Thanks for having me.
Joanne, I love the title of the show. For those who can't read the title, it's Existentialism.
Yes.
And tell me what the show is about.
Well, it's called Existentialism, which is existentialism with eggs, because when I turned 35, so I'm 38 now, when I turned 35, I realized that I had never really considered whether or not I wanted to have children or if that was going to be a facet of my life. I was genuinely ambivalent, you know, it had never crossed my mind. I didn't feel any different sort of physically, emotionally, psychologically than I had 10 years earlier. But suddenly, that's sort of the age you're told by the internet and doctors and things that your fertility is about to fall off a cliff. And I felt like I had to suddenly think about this issue and make a decision. And I really had no idea at all what I wanted. And it felt like, at the time, hugely important, something that I should know what I wanted, that if I didn't think about it and make a decision, that the decision would be made for me by my own inaction.
The dreaded biological clock.
Yeah, and so I really didn't know what to do. And I was looking around and started talking to peers and friends and realised that a lot of other people were in a similar position. I don't know how things are in Malaysia in regards to all of this, but certainly in Ireland, where I come from, people are waiting longer and longer to have kids and even to start thinking about whether or not they want to have kids. So I realised I wasn't alone in that. Increasingly also, people are making the, you know, entirely valid decision not to have children at all. Over a fifth of all young women in Ireland and England and most of Europe will go on not to have children. Mm-hmm. So increasingly that's a choice people are making, but that didn't seem to be reflected in the media, in the films, and you know what I mean? And the blueprint for that life wasn't clear to me. It wasn't something I was seeing. It wasn't something that was being spoken about, certainly not on stages. So I decided to make a show.
And what is the show? What will we be seeing?
So the show is, it's a one-woman show in that there's only one performer, but there are many other characters. So the show charts my journey from that moment, my 35th birthday, my journey to a decision about whether or not I wanted to have children. And I go to very extreme and forensic lengths, as is my character. I do that with everything. So in the course of the show, I speak to family, friends. I go to fertility clinics, fortune tellers in particularly desperate moments. The internet, obviously, you know, darker times. And, you know, any you know, social historians, doctors, anybody that I could talk to try and get an answer to this really difficult but also really interesting and fascinating question. So the show charts that journey, but it's also a lot to do with my mum and her mm-hmm. journey. So I'm the only child of a single parent, a very close relationship with my mother. And when she got pregnant with me in the late 70s in Ireland, it wasn't cool at all to be a single unmarried mother. Yeah. So she left the country and went to London for fear that I might be taken from her, which is how I ended up being born in London. And so it's as much about her journey to her decision and the context, the Ireland and the world that she made her decision in, and how things have changed or not changed. And she's also plays herself in the show through audio recordings throughout and has all of the best lines, which is infuriating for me. She's hilarious. But so she's acting as sort of the voice of reason, but also an intergenerational link. Mm. Because I was interested in how your personal and cultural and social context inform your big life decision. You don't make decisions like that in a vacuum. So I was really interested in kind of teasing all of that out.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that intergenerational link, because one of the things you said was to examine whether things have changed or whether they hadn't.
Yes.
Did you find that the way we think about, the way women think about having children or not having children, the idea of being a parent, has it changed?
I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think the demographic reality has changed, but in terms of how people consider themselves and their value and how society is structured culturally in Ireland, certainly it's very focused around family celebrations and family and the assumption that you will have a family and all of those things. So I felt that that culturally we kind of hadn't caught up to the demographic reality, actually, you know, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's something that, you know, while Ireland and Malaysia may not be exactly similar, I think there's definitely that sense of there's still a lot of pressure, if I may call it that, in terms of expecting a woman to hit certain milestones. And one of those milestones is still having a child is considered one of those that you're kind of expected to hit.
Yes.
Was this something that you had personally faced? I mean, the show is largely autobiographical.
Yes, it is entirely, yeah.
And where do those pressures come from in your case?
God, well, I mean, once I was jokingly written a prescription by a doctor for a nice young man when he found out.
Oh, gosh.
When he found out how old I was.
Yeah.
Which was very funny, but also not funny at all.
And that's how these things often pan out, right? They're supposed to be funny, but they're not quite funny.
Yeah, so I think there is still that assumption. I think as well what was interesting for me and why I thought it was a show that was worth writing was because I felt like I'm part of this first generation of humans, not just women, but humans who have a choice. Yeah. My mother didn't, my grandmother certainly didn't, and that's true in most parts of the world. So being part of this kind of experimental cohort of people who have a choice for the first time, but you don't have a blueprint for what the alternative decision will look like. I think that's kind of really interesting to be part of that group, you know.
And this notion of choice in itself is tricky, isn't it? Because we do have a choice in many ways, but then we're also placed in situations or amongst conversations and expectations that often make it feel like we don't have a choice.
Yes, yeah. There is an assumption, and I think there's a lot of pressure. Like, people have reached out to me since I started performing the show. I started performing it in 2016, so there's been 2 years of performances, and a lot of them international. I was really taken by that, how the show has resonated so much with international audiences, despite its focus on Irish culture. And I think because so many of the themes and experiences that I'm describing are global, increasingly, and universal. And lots of people have reached out to me through emails and in private messages and after the show to tell me about their experiences and the huge pressures that they felt were placed on them to have children or to make a decision, you know.
As you mentioned, since you premiered the show in Dublin, I believe, 2 years ago?
Yes, so in Limerick, where I'm from, and in Dublin, that was the first.
And the play has gotten a lot of buzz, so much acclaim, and it's travelled to so many countries.
Yes.
It's won the Lustrum Award, the Melbourne Fringe Tour Ready Award, the Best Storytelling Award at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Mm-hmm. What do you think exactly about the show resonates with so many people, even in cultures that may not be very similar to yours?
Yeah, well, I think because of the global themes, I think because of the experiences that are not just particular to me or to Irish women and men. I think it's a global trend that people are waiting longer to have children, choosing not to have children, or because they're waiting, finding that they can't have children, so the decision is made for them in that way. So I think for those reasons, and also maybe because the story is so particular and so rooted in an individual experience, that makes it universal. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot to be said for that, I think. Sometimes the more particular something is, actually, the more universal it becomes.
Was it a challenge to mine sort of your own insecurities and your own experiences and then to lay it out for people to see?
It was definitely a process. I think I'm quite an open person anyway. And I think what was more tricky for me, actually, was minding the privacy and sort of the rights of people close to me, because one of the things that I'm finding making our autobiographical work is that it's not just you're necessarily telling other people's stories.
Right.
So my boyfriend, who I had just met when I started writing the show, like on our third date, literally, I had to say, so I'm writing a show about my eggs.
And no pressure.
Don't worry, no. You won't be in it. Of course, he's completely in it. So is his sperm count. So like, it's very, my mother was very giving. She's a character in the show, as I said, she plays herself. And lots of very personal details about her life. Are in it, but even in smaller ways, you know, my father who passed away 5 years ago is mentioned sometimes in not very favourable terms. So that was something I had to take in his family's feelings into account, his friends' feelings into account. So I went through this very kind of rigorous process of you know, checking in multiple times with everybody who was affected or even tangentially mentioned in the show. To make sure that they knew that they had a genuine right to veto any. But, like, I'm so happy that everybody has approached it in a really giving, open spirit and feel that it's worthwhile and want to be part of it. So I was very lucky.
Well, we need to take a break, but when we come back, I'm particularly interested to hear about this aspect, because one of the things that you say, it's a contemporary story and it's set very much in the experience of being a woman today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to talk more about that when we come back.
Sure.
I'm speaking to Joanne Ryan, the creator and performer of a theatre production on reproduction called Existentialism, which is showing tonight, the 7th of September. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to Joanne Ryan, who created and performs In Existentialism, a theatre performance that examines the issues of a woman trying to decide whether to have children. So, Joanne, one of the things that is significant about this show, I feel, is that it actually addresses women of today, women of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. In your case, an Irish woman. But what exactly would you say is different about the contemporary experience of motherhood and, or, you know, to not be a mother versus what women before us dealt with?
Yikes. Well, I haven't had the experience, obviously, of being of a different generation. So it's hard for me to say. I did speak to my mother at length as part of this process and to many, many women, actually. There's a lot of testimony in the show from other women of all different ages and backgrounds who shared their experiences, which was a great privilege for me. So it's hard to say what's different. I think one of the things that I do in the show, actually, is there's elements of documentary to it, which I haven't mentioned. So I look at the history of Ireland's reproductive rights and,
sure,
and sexual health history,
yes,
from the beginning of the state. So Ireland became a republic in 1916 rather. I made the show in 2016. So there's pieces of animated, very funny, but, you know, with a lot of serious subject matter, but with a light touch through the show, snippets of how the country evolved and how things changed and progressed from, you know, any kind of mention even of contraception being illegal at, mm-hmm, some points, to how we've sort of evolved to the country we are today. We're just recently, I don't know if you're aware,
in May,
yes, there you, was a very landmark.
You lifted the ban on abortion. Well,
yes.
Ireland lifted the ban on abortion.
Yeah, so now it's legal in some circumstances, which was, you know, a huge watershed moment for the country and something certainly even 5 years ago I don't think we could have imagined would have been possible, mm-hmm, you know. So it sort of contextualizes all of that. And yeah, so I mean, my mum certainly has told me that she didn't really feel that she had a choice. Like, in practical terms, the options of terminating pregnancies weren't there. There wasn't access to contraception. When I was conceived, contraception was illegal in Ireland still, and was only given in certain circumstances to bona fide married couples for family planning purposes, you know. So the Catholic Church had a huge influence on every aspect of people's personal lives and relationships and sexual lives, you know. So that isn't the case now, thankfully. So we have a lot more bodily autonomy in Ireland that I do than previous generations, which impacts on my decisions and my ability to control my sexual health and my reproductive health. But still, those pressures that we talked about earlier are there, you know, particularly in rural areas. People from rural areas told me that they felt a huge pressure. They didn't feel that things had moved on at all from previous generations. So I think it can depend where in the country you are and the pressures from your family, which can vary from family to family, I suppose. But there is very much still an implicit assumption or understanding that you will go on to have a child, and that if you don't, you will be at a loss for some reason.
Right,
you know?
And that you're somehow less of a woman, or that you should have a motherly instinct.
Yeah.
And there are all of these statements that are made that kind of make this sort of very clear to women, even from a very young age, which I think can be, even if you don't hear it overtly, you internalize a lot of these pressures.
Yes, absolutely,
which,
of course.
I mean, to me, because I just turned 35. So it resonates with me when you say that when you sort of hit one of those age milestones, mm-hmm. are the times when you start thinking to yourself, despite all of your thoughts to the contrary, there are times when you question, am I making the right decision? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And it's that question, isn't it, that is this what we are supposed to be doing?
Yeah. And also, I think because we don't have role models, or we don't have images of what a successful, happy, fulfilled life looks like without children as much as we do with the, you know, the traditional kind of family narrative, it's hard to imagine yourself being happy and fulfilled and all of those things. I suppose one of the things that the show, I won't give away the ending because there may be a bit of a reveal, but one of the places that the show brought me to around the issue was the understanding, I think, that, and actually there is no right decision for anybody, and life will be great and terrible for just different reasons. Either way, you know, there'll just be a different set of consequences to your decision as there is for any decision. And it isn't this, it doesn't need to be this huge pivotal, important, you know, make or break like decision that it's made out to be.
Yeah. And one of the things that I found very interesting about the description of your show is that you say that you talk about the why of having children.
Yes.
Which is not a question that gets asked enough.
No.
and what is, you know, in your process, what was the why when you examined it?
Oh, there were so many. I mean, there's actually a section of pros and cons in the show where you go through all these ridiculous, you know, because, I mean, really what I found as well is that you can so effectively argue a brilliant case for either decision.
Sure.
You know, I can make brilliant points about why I shouldn't. You know, it's unethical if environmentally and overpopulation and the damage to my career, my health, you know, job loss. There's so many reasons why I shouldn't, actually. And also, you know, I've lost a parent. I'd be necessarily giving that grief to a child. Is that an ethical thing to do? Mm-hmm. You know, I've been a full-time carer to my mother. Would I want to risk putting a child of mine in that position? You know, all of those things. Mm-hmm. But then equally, you can make a brilliant
of
case
course.
For... So yeah, you can... So that's not a very helpful process. I've found the pros and cons.
But actually, what I find interesting about that process is that it negates so much of the... I mean, a lot of times women who choose to have children and women who don't are often pitted against each other as if it's as if they're people who have made the wrong or the right choice.
Right.
What you just said, you know, hits the nail on the head saying that's not actually true. It is basically... what's right for me may not necessarily be what's right for you. Is this a message that you thought you would start off with? Or was this a path that you took that you learned from as well?
Oh, absolutely. And selfishly, one of the reasons I decided to make the show was because I was hoping it would help me come to a decision. And it didn't. So it failed on that score. But it did come bring me to that sense of peace with, you know, knowing that there was no right decision for me, actually. And there would just be, as I said, a different set of consequences. But selfishly, yes, I was hoping that it would help me make the decision.
Yeah.
That if I thought about it long enough and interrogated the question forensically enough, that there would be an answer. But there is no answer.
Yeah.
There never is. It's just... it's just one thing that happens or doesn't happen, and that's what I found, which is a great, I suppose, resolution for me and for a lot of people watching the show as well, who were similarly conflicted or found themselves in a position where they couldn't have children, and for a number of reasons, you know, or were coming to terms with unexpected pregnancies, for example, you know, all of those kinds of, it can be very, very difficult, conflicted issue mm-hmm. for so many people for so many different reasons. So, yeah, but I mean, in terms of making the show, I was actually part of a theatre incubation scheme that was run by a political theatre company in the UK called Theatre Uncut. So I knew going into it that I would be writing a piece of political theatre, but I didn't know what it would be. And it just happened that the first meeting coincided with my 35th birthday. And suddenly I was struck with all those kind yes. of issues. Like, oh, maybe this should be the play. Because
yes.
we were doing this icebreaker on the first day, and they asked us to kind of, you know, rant about things we were angry about or afraid of for 1 minute, which I did. And at the end, kind of as a joke, I said, and I don't know whether or not I want to have a baby. And then the room went dead and everyone burst out laughing. But I realised
yep.
the joke was on me, actually, because it was true. I didn't. So that's where it came from.
Well, it's such an interesting way of how the personal then becomes the political, isn't it?
Yes.
Because I don't think you intended for that to be a political statement.
No, but I mean, the political so often is in the personal. Mm-hmm. You know, the most political act you can do is you live your life and mm-hmm. make decisions in your own life. So, I find the personal inherently political and fascinating. And then I've contextualised it in very kind of overt political ways as well, you know. And it's a comedy, so it's extremely funny, which I think means you can take people further, you know, with ideas.
Well, that is actually something that I've wanted to ask you about, which is the use of humour in an issue like this, which can often be difficult, painful, frustrating.
Yeah, it's how I understand the world around me, and the contradictions in the world around me has always been personally through humour. And I've done, you know, stand-up comedy before and really gravitate towards humorous comedic roles and stories. And I think it's a brilliant way to storytell. I think it's really fun. But also, as I said, you can bring people further in a journey when they're laughing mm-hmm. than when they're not.
You have mentioned in some of your interviews that while the show is about a woman's experience, that it's not necessarily only for women. And that you've had audience members of all genders identify with your story.
Oh, yeah. For me, I feel like it's more of a generational issue than a gender issue. So there are, so I'm a woman, okay, but there are some elements to the issue which are gender specific. There's no denying that, you know. There is more of an implied clock on my biology than on my boyfriend's. But for the most part, I feel strongly that it's a generational question. And that's why it was really important for me to include my boyfriend in the play, actually, mm-hmm. which he very happily agreed to do, because he was in the same position. He said, well, I don't know, when I told him that on that third date that I don't tell you about earlier, like, I'm writing a show about my ex, but I'm totally sane. It's fine. Everything's fine. Just relax. He said, well, that's great. I think it's really important. I think it's a really important subject. I think people aren't talking about it enough. And I also am in that situation. I'm 35 as well. He's the same age as me. And I don't know whether or not I want to have children. And maybe I don't have the same, you know, biological urgency as you do. But I also don't want to be having children after the age of 40. I don't want to be an old dad. I know that. Mm-hmm. So then how am I going to make this huge life decision for myself? So I thought it was important to include his journey as well, because it is a generational issue, actually, conundrum,
right,
rather than a gender one specifically.
One of the things about this particular generation is that when it comes to this imperative or this question of whether to have children or not, there is that overt pressure from family, friends and so on. But there's also the kind of pressure where this subtle sort of one-upmanship that's come to play because of social media and this necessity to sort of present a perfect life. And that perfect life often falls back into that space of, oh, you know, I did this and then I got married and then mm-hmm. I had my babies and then here are the baby photos. And does that play into your show at all?
As not so much as just the internet more broadly, actually. So there is a point in the show where I fall down the rabbit hole of the internet, where it's just
like so many of us do,
such conflicting nonsense, you know. They're not great nights, but but so it was more about the I was more focused in the show with the impact of the internet more broadly on decision making. I went, so there's a thing, you know, Google Trends, where you can see how many times a particular question or phrase or keywords have been answered and chart it over time. And I looked at the phrase, should I? And the increase is just like exponential. So people are going to the internet now to ask about their what they should do. And like, should I leave my husband? Mm-hmm. Should I get married? Mm-hmm. Should I have a kid? Should I, you know, like really important questions. The first port of call for so many of us, and myself included. I'm not, you know, immune to this. It's the internet. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, well, come on, that's amazing, considering what a terrible source of answers.
Yes, exactly. But perhaps it's as uncertain as we are in terms of you find what you want to find.
Yes, like, yeah, you can find information to support either. Yeah, not very helpful. But this, but obviously the social media thing is a huge issue, you know, and it is part of it for so many people. When you're seeing this kind of glamorized, glossy, perfect vision of people, and with their kids, particularly in the pictures that they choose to put up. And, you know, it's a very glamorized version of life. You
and
know?
At least from the outside, I feel that pressure, it doesn't exist only for the women who choose not to have children or don't have children. But even for the ones who do, there's always another step to achieve. There's always a different standard to meet.
I have lots of friends who have kids, and the stuff they tell me about the pressures from other mothers and parents and like sites like Mumsnet. Oh, I don't know if you've ever got on there, even just out of morbid curiosity, but it's pretty intense. Mm. So, yeah.
So it's been about, it's been slightly over 2 years since the show opened.
Yes.
And with things happening in the world, with developments in terms of, you mentioned the lift on the abortion ban in Ireland, for instance, we've had the Me Too movement, we've had so many discussions about women's autonomy. Has the show changed in the time that since you've opened it? Do you see possibilities for ways in which the performance can evolve?
That's an interesting question. It's something that I've considered, certainly. I mean, primarily, I suppose, with the abortion referendum result, because is that something to include or not? And I've made the decision for the time being. Nothing is set in stone and things can evolve and change. Of course, they can. But I made the decision at the time not to include that because the show, maybe for international audiences, it's more relevant. I suppose I've only been performing it in Ireland since the ban was lifted. There's an assumed knowledge that people know very, like all we were listening to for so many months was the abortion referendum. So we're very aware that it passed. So I suppose the show charts the time in my life from 2015 to 2016, mid-2016, when I went on this journey to try and find an answer. So I feel like that stands. That's what the show is about. It isn't about what's happened since the show was on the road and all the other changes. But I'm open to that changing as well. You know, it's an evolving thing. I never imagined that the show would still be touring 2 years later and it would be of so much interest to international audiences. You know, it's been fantastic.
And how have you grown and evolved since you started doing the show?
Yikes. Well, I mean, it's been fascinating to perform it internationally to different audiences. That's been really eye-opening for me. And I suppose it's made me understand more on a deeper level the value of theatre, I think, in lots of ways, and why it is an important art form solidified the reasons why I want to work in theatre and continue to make theatre for the time being. So that's been really great for me on a personal and professional level. It's made me understand, I suppose, the power that there can be in autobiographical theatre and autobiographical work. So I suppose professionally, personally, it's been huge. Performing the show, writing the show and performing the show has helped me come to, you know, develop my decision on whether or not to have children. You'll have to come and see the show and find out what happened, which has been great. That's an ongoing process. And just an amazing opportunity to travel to so many different countries and find out what's happening in other cultures. I think another reason why international audiences are interested in the show is because they find it really interesting to find out what's happening in such detail in another country and then compare that to their own and what's the same and what's different and, you know, draw parallels and things. That's really fun for people, I think. But it's similarly for me.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I think what you just said, this idea of the power of storytelling, there's still not enough stories being told by women about women, and certainly not on issues, not enough on issues like what existentialism talks about.
Absolutely. I don't think of myself as being a woman, you know, a woman writer, a woman playwright. Yeah. I'm a playwright.
As you shouldn't.
And a performer. Yeah. And this is my life. It's not a woman's life, you know. But necessarily there is a power in that. And I'm not unaware of everything that you said. I agree with you. Mm. There's, you know, not enough women telling their stories and then being recognised as just part of the human narrative and not some niche minority, minority interest, you know. So I think that's really important that women tell stories about not just their gender, but as I said, their generation and the world that they're living in, and be part of shaping the narrative for everybody. You know, that's crucial.
And if there's one thing that you hope to say with existentialism, what would that be?
I think it's something that I mentioned earlier, which is that what feels like a really huge, important life decision, it maybe isn't that scary, huge and important after all, you know, that there will be, as I said, just different sets of consequences to different paths, and one is not better or worse than the other.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Joanne.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking to Joanne Ryan from Ireland, who is the creator and performer of Existentialism, a multiple award-winning theatrical show that looks at what it is like for a woman in today's world trying to decide whether to have a child. The show will be staged here in KL tonight, the 7th of September, as part of the Diversity KL International Arts Festival 2018. Tickets are priced at ringgit 50 and can be purchased at diversity.my. That's diversecity.my. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app. You've been listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.